Barbie and Friends, 1490 WGCH, 105.5 FM, and WGCH.com, anywhere. Well, this is just a perfect way to be wrapping up the end of the summer, is with our good friend, Ted Pryor, who is a managing partner of Greenwich Harbor Partners. And you've had a busy, busy, successful summer.
We've been busy. Knock on wood, our business has held up right through the COVID time period, which is great news. You never know how these things will turn.
Right. For those who may be tuning in for the first time and are not familiar with Greenwich Harbor Partners, could you tell our folks a little bit about it and how it works?
Yeah, sure. We're executive recruiters based in Greenwich, and we work with middle market and large companies for the most part, looking for C-suite executives in what I call the customer-facing positions, the CEO, the CFO, the CMO, those leading positions. And as part of our business, we have a thriving board practice, and we've done a lot of work recently with nonprofit board recruiting, and that's kept us very, very busy.
That's wonderful. How does a board recruitment differ from other types of recruitment that you do?
Well, when we're doing a senior executive, you're looking for one person with very, very specific skills and a very, very specific background. So you're combing the world to find ultimately one person, and you might have three or four at the end of the process, and you get the client to work to narrow that down to the one person, and you pick one person. Also, the company is always in a hurry. They by the time they call you, they really need this done, and so everything is done as fast as we possibly can. For the board work that we've been doing, it's a little different. You're looking for a couple of different profiles. You're looking for some people that add some different kinds of skills to the board. You're looking for some people that have different backgrounds. You might be looking for people with diverse backgrounds, diverse ethnic or racial backgrounds. You're looking for gender diversity. And so you're looking for several different profiles to try to get one, two, or three new board members to join the board at the same time. Although, of course, people are in a hurry, the process tends to be a little bit longer, and I'm slightly more relaxed. There's time. You need to get to know these people, vice versa. They need to get you. So it has a slightly different pace to it, which is kind of nice.
Well, that's good. So you have the best of both worlds.
Yeah. So we have both going on, and we've been doing both during the COVID time period. Our commercial business has tailed off a little bit, as you might imagine, but it's been picking up during the month of August with some new opportunities on the commercial side. Companies that have the bondholders have bought them out, and they're needing to put fresh management in, or companies that have done remarkably well during the COVID time period and are now wanting to expand and add staff. So we're now seeing those kinds of assignments. And then the nonprofit board work, has just continued to pace. And I would say that the Black Lives Matter issues that have been raised, the social justice issues, have accelerated people's interest in diversifying their boards.
That's really interesting. So I'm always fascinated how events in life have the ripple effect on so many other parts of our lives. I wouldn't have necessarily thought that there'd be any connection there, but now that you mention it, it makes perfect sense that there'd be more of a sense of awareness of having racial diversity.
Yeah, I have to tell you that we've spoken to a lot of corporate leaders over the last couple of months as we do our work, and everywhere in the country, it's on people's minds. Am I doing the right thing? Could I be doing more? How do I do a better job within my company? I think everybody would say that they were thinking about these issues and working on them prior to the COVID time period and prior to the Black Lives Matter issue, but it's just accelerated the people's energy and thought processes.
Do you think also maybe, I mean, I love the silver lining of stories, but maybe some of the benefits that we are seeing in business because of COVID, that more people are interested that might not have been before, had been resistant to virtual communication like doing Zoom or FaceTime and meetings, whatever platform they want to use, or online advertising or buying and all of that, because it seems that the internet is going to be a bigger part of our lives, not a smaller part of our lives.
Absolutely, and that's absolutely true. I spoke to someone who took a job as a chief operating officer for a very large restaurant chain, and I said, boy, this is a tough time to take on a restaurant management business. And he said, look, it's just forcing us to make decisions and do things that we were going to have to do anyway sooner and more quickly. There's fewer excuses to hold off. The restaurant business is a very traditional business, and thinking about how to use the online ordering and to offer customers to do more takeout and so on. A lot of restaurant chains were not equipped for that, but it's something that consumers want and want more of. And of course, at this time period, it's for a lot of businesses the only way to make money. So it's accelerating change in many ways. And my other favorite example is telemedicine. I've had two or three doctor's appointments by video conference, and it's fantastic. I mean, for certain kinds of issues and questions and checkups and whatnot, blood test is taken separately, and then you sit down and talk with your doctor like you would. They're more relaxed. I'm more relaxed. I don't have to go into the office. It's fantastic, and I don't see how that gets shoved back in the box. That's right. Here to stay.
Right. Hopefully. I'm having a conversation with a Connecticut senator next week about some of the resistance of insurance companies to continue letting it be covered after March, but that's for another day. That you mentioned the telemedicine. That also makes it so much easier. You can be on vacation and have your doctor's appointment. You don't have to risk COVID infection by going into an office, a doctor's practice.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they just have to sort out, what to charge and how to make sure that the information is tracked properly and security issues and so on. But
right.
For as long as the doctor makes the same amount of money, that they would if you went into the office.
Right.
There's no need to go in. So I think that's happening a lot. I certainly know some older people who did not like Zoom and did not like video calls, and they did not like ordering online, and they've learned how to do it. And guess what? Once you climb the learning curve, it's not so bad.
Right, right. We've talked previously about changing the old paradigm of the pyramid of the CEO and on down to a more of a sense of a team effort in running a business. How does that work for the retention if it's all virtual and online? Can there be that retention of the customer?
Although it introduces competition, right? I mean, if a lot of your customers like to come to your store and buy at your store, and they know where you're located, and they know how to park and so on, there's a lot of momentum there. And now suddenly they're buying from the same store online. Suddenly shopping opportunities will pop up. And, as Google will start showing you alternatives. So I think it makes, in some ways it introduces competition. So it expands your market and expands your connection with customers. But it also risks exposing your customers to competition. I don't know about you, but I always favor a local store if I can.
Yes.
I always favor a specialist, if I can, over something like Amazon. I tend to only go to Amazon I have to say this when I really want it tomorrow, or I really want it in 2 days. Then Amazon is a little bit more reliable than some of the others. But gosh, there's some interesting specialists out there with you know, catalogs on, let's say, you know, sharpening knives or you know, connectors or cigars or whatever it is. There's the specialists are fantastic.
So when you're doing a search for let's say a mid-size company, do you put that in? Do you give them a questionnaire you want them to fill out? What are you looking for? What are your needs? Do you sit and talk to them? How does the process unfold?
Well, no questionnaires, but we will spend a good amount of time talking with the customer about what they need, what they're looking for. We'll challenge them on a few things if we can, and that's a dialogue that will go on over the first few weeks of an assignment, and we then document it and write it down, you know, then and get them to circulate it internally. Is this what you think you're looking for? We try to get consensus built on both sides, both internally there and with us as to what the goal is. And even if it seems incredible and impossible, how would we ever find this person? Where are they going to be? We can't afford that person. Whatever. Let's write down exactly what we're looking for and be clear about it and on one piece of paper. And with the idea that if that person walked in the door 2 days from now, we'd be thrilled and we could make a decision. You know, what we try to avoid is people having the dialogue on what they're looking for, you know, after three or four candidates are in the house and interviewing. Then you know, you're gonna chew up a lot of time and you're gonna chew up a lot of candidates.
Right.
It's a dialogue that we then document, I call it going slow to go fast. You know, with an extra few days, right? An extra few days getting everybody to some kind of consensus as to what their really would be the ideal candidate would look like before we reach out to anybody.
That makes tremendous sense. I like that. Go slow to go fast. That's kind of along the same lines as smarter, not harder. All very
right.
Good pieces of advice from Ted Pryor. Just before we go to our commercial break, can you give your website information, please?
Yeah, please look me up at GreenwichHarborPartners.com.
All right. I hear my music, so that's time for a break, and then we'll be right back with Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH 105.5 FM and WGCH.com anywhere. Welcome back to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and 105.5 FM and WGCH.com anywhere. I have Ted Pryor, who is one of the managing directors of Greenwich Harbor Partners Executive Search, here with me today. And I always love the tutorial that you give, Ted, on understanding executive search and how it works and the importance of it. But now I just would love it if you would take some time to explain to us about your most recent board search. I mean, four people, that's a huge amount of people.
Yeah, we just completed an assignment for Teach for America, Jacksonville, Florida, and we placed four board members with them. I would say that there was an 8 or 9-person board in place. I would call it a founding board. People had been involved in Teach for America Jacksonville for several years, perhaps from when it was founded 8 or 10 years ago, and it was time to kind of refresh, grow, and diversify the board. And so we worked with Teach for America Jacksonville over the period of this spring and into the summer, and we were able to complete placement of four new board members, which is, you know, obviously a huge benefit to the organization.
Fantastic. I have a question on the I'm looking at the description of these new board members. What is a chief people officer? What does that mean?
Well, sometimes people call it a human resources.
HR, okay.
Human resources, chief people officer, chief human resources officer, the head of human capital. These are somewhat similar names that maybe might meet different kinds of things. The remarkable thing about this candidate, her name is Elizabeth Thompson, is that her company, Southeastern Grocers, has 45,000 employees.
Whoa. That's a lot of people that she's responsible for.
The chief people officer.
By the way, that's like a whole town.
That's it is, and it's across seven states. And she's in the grocery business. You know, brand names that we would all recommend. You know, recognize Winn-Dixie being the one that I know the best. But Harvey's, Fresco and Moss, Bilo, these are brands that are well known in the Southeast, and so tons of locations, people at every level of the organization. You know, and of course in the COVID time period, you know, remarkable challenges.
Yeah. What exactly does Teach for America in Jacksonville stand for? Is it a nonprofit helping teachers or helping kids or helping both?
Sure. Teach for America is a national organization that has 52 regions, of which Jacksonville is one of them. We've also worked with Teach for America Connecticut, which is another region. Teach for America recruits college graduates to teach in the school system for 2 years as kind of working interns, and then stays in touch with them after they graduate from 2 years and continues to mentor them as alumni. So they're an extra pair of hands in the school. They'll teach math or English or science for 2 years. And many of them will then, of course, become inspired and stay in education or stay in teaching. Others will go on with their careers and other things. It was founded by an inspiration by Bill Clinton, who said, you know, if college graduates want to go and do community service, why are we sending them all off to the Peace Corps internationally? Why don't we have a domestic Peace Corps? And so he founded a thing called AmeriCorps. And AmeriCorps supports about, I think, 30 different organizations, of which Teach for America is one, where people can graduate from college and do community service in one way or another for a year or 2 years.
Great. So from your other side of looking at things as an executive recruiter, if you saw that on someone's resume that they had participated in Teach for America, actually doing the teaching, or had been a former board member of Teach for America, how would you view that? Would that be like a big plus-plus, or, oh, that's nice, they're socially conscious, or how would you see that?
No, from the point of view of a graduate who's gone to work in Teach for America for 2 years, it's a huge plus as a resume item, at least for the first 5 to 10 years. After that, it begins to fade in importance, and your other accomplishments kick in. But for those first 5 or 10 years, you know, that's 2 years when they did one of the hardest jobs there is, which is teaching young elementary kids, you know, math, English, or science, and all the challenges that requires, the people skills, the management skills. So it's a terrific experience, and we're very close to the head of the chief people officer at Goldman Sachs and Facebook and Google and McKinsey, and they all are very supportive of the Teach for America experience.
Great.
McKinsey recruits from Teach for America as though it were one of their primary schools.
That's super. And what about Riley Keyes?
Riley's a great individual, the second candidate. Riley did his entire career in the Army before he went out into the commercial world. He literally retired from the Army, and then got a BA and an MBA from Troy University, which apparently specializes, among many other things, in supporting military veterans. And so he got an MBA and a BA from Troy University, and then joined, of all things, Amazon, where he went into operations. And then when we found him, he was a general manager for Fanatics, which makes football jerseys and sports team hats and things like that. You know, if you wanted to buy your team shirt or your team hat or something, getting ready to go to a game, you would go to a Fanatics store, and they're headquartered in Tampa. So so he interviewed at Teach for America by having all the Teach for America people come over to his operation and walk around with him as he worked with his employees.
That's fantastic. Very unique opportunity. Really,
yeah,
unusual.
Yeah, great. Very interesting guy. And, you know, you don't meet too many people who've had two completely different careers,
no.
one in the military and one in the commercial world.
And what about Kevin Hyde?
So Kevin's an attorney who's an expert in employment law, and it turns out that he's very passionate about education and serves on a number of education boards. He runs the Jacksonville office for a national law firm called Foley & Lardner, and it turned out that he had helped Teach for America get started when they first arrived in Jacksonville 10 years ago.
What a coincidence.
But then had lost touch and was excited to be tapped and brought back in.
Oh, that's just a super story to start something and then circle back and become a board member.
Yeah.
That's really nice. And Cindy Reynolds, Chief Philanthropy Officer. That sounds like fundraising.
Well, in this case, she's giving the money away as opposed to fundraising. She's with Baptist Health, which is a large hospital system in Jacksonville, large hospital system in Florida. And it's often hard to recruit people out of the health systems because they have their own recruiting needs. It's also often hard to recruit people out of the philanthropy area because, you know, the relationship is kind of you should apply to me for money and I'll see if I can grant money, but it would be might be a conflict for me to be sitting on a board. So we're very excited to have her say she actually herself wanted to be on the board of Teach for America. And of course, it's great to have someone on the board who understands philanthropy, who understands development, who understands fundraising.
Right.
She had been a development officer. She had been a fundraiser for her in her past job at Bon Secours in Detroit, and so she kind of understood both sides, both the donor's perspective and the fundraiser's perspective. And that's a rare find. We always are looking for people who have development expertise to sit on the boards, and it's hard to find.
That's like double checks next to that kind of.
Yeah, so we have one person out of the grocery industry, one person out of the hospital industry, one person who's in the retail business with sports equipment, and a lawyer. That you could probably recreate
that's
civilization
like
with that group,
board.
Right? What's that?
That's like the golden board of directors.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Plus
the existing
women,
board is strong
you've
got, as well. So
racial diversity. Oh, you've got the whole thing going.
Exactly.
Isn't that exciting when something like that just pulls together and you go, wow, look what we were able to do to be of service to Teach for America?
Yeah, no, it's very exciting. This is now, Darby, our 18th board assignment in the nonprofit world.
Wow. So lots and lots.
So I count 49 board members across 18 organizations.
Mm, fantastic. And so it's interesting. Anywhere in the United States, if someone needs help, they can contact you.
They certainly can, and we are hearing from a lot of interesting organizations. As you can imagine, diversity recruiting has gotten to be very, very important.
I also noticed you have a new website.
Well, we tweak it from now,
yeah,
you know, from time
great.
To time. I get excited and go in and make some changes and put some new pictures in, freshen it up a little bit. It's an amateur effort, but it's fun.
Oh, I thought it looked great when I was looking at it earlier today.
Thank you.
Before we run out of time, could you give us contact information on your website again, please?
Yeah, my information is on the website, greenwichharborpartners.com. My phone is there. My email is there. If any of this triggers a question, please feel free to reach out to me.
That's wonderful. Oh, I was just going to start to ask you a question, but I hear my music starting to play, which means we're going to run out of time, which we always run out of time because you're so fascinating to talk to.
Thank you. I want to say
a very, very big thank you to Ted Pryor of Greenwich Harbor Partners, Executive Search, for being with us today and sharing this wonderful news about what's happening for Greenwich Harbor Partners and also how he can help your business become stronger. You've been listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and 105.5 FM and WGCH.com anywhere.